Good morning. My name is Hannah Bledsoe. It's Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. So I just really want to thank Lisa for starting this company, and I thank you all for all you do. I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. I just wanted Lisa to know I finished my big purge today and actually took off the final box to be shredded. So I'm an all-access member, ready to start the new year. My next thing is to implement the Sunday basket. I'm looking forward to the podcast on the Hot Mess Room in early December that Lisa's going to put out. And then I am focused on learning how to organize my photos and memorabilia. But anyway, this program does work. I got the Paper Solution book, and that's really how I got introduced to Lisa and Organize 365. And I'm just really thankful for her and for all of you. Thanks again. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
Do you have an Organize 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organize365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organize 365.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started.
If you're listening to this real time, it's Christmas Eve. So if you celebrate, happy Christmas Eve. Today on the podcast, I just want to share some observations that I've made over the last year and a half. What I see going on in our families and inside of society. And honestly, if you and I were one-on-one in person today, because I literally don't do small talk, like I can't even do it. I don't know how. I jump into meaty conversations everywhere. Like if you were a family member, this is the conversation I would be starting with you as we're sitting together on the couch. So take that as you will, but these are the observations I specifically have really been honing in on in the last 4 or 6 weeks. I'm recording this right before Thanksgiving in the United States, so the middle of November. And I was going to record this podcast, and then I threw away all of my notes. And then I got confirmation that I definitely am supposed to record this podcast, and I also think it's completely weird and out there. So skip it if you want. It's not organization related whatsoever. So sometime probably at the beginning of October, I heard a song on the radio and I didn't know who the artist was. So I looked over at my radio because my radio in my car tells me who the artist is, but only on certain channels. I don't understand. So anyway, I was on one of these channels where it wouldn't tell me who the artist was, and it made me have this thought process. Greg knows who sings every song. And he also knows, like, if it's Phil Collins as Phil Collins or Phil Collins as Genesis. I'm like, what? It's all the same guy. He goes, no, totally different songs. I'm like, okay, I don't get it. I am the person that you could put on any song in the world and I'll be able to sing every single word of the song. Like, I remember being a little kid, like 3 or 4 years old, and I could sing every word of the songs that would play on the radio. Like, I can retain the words in songs, and Greg knows who the artists are. Similarly, in movies, like Greg and I will quote movie lines. I'll know what the movie is, but I'll have no idea who the actor is, unless it's like Harrison Ford. Like, I know who he is. But Craig said, and I don't even remember the name, who's Ted from the Apple show, Ted Lasso? I can't remember his name. Jason Sudeikis. Greg says, Jason Sudeikis is hosting Saturday Night Live. And I said, who's Jason Sudeikis? And he's like, Ted from Ted Lasso. I'm like, oh, didn't know what his name was. I don't know the names of people. I don't know the names of actors. Like, you literally are whoever you are in the movie to me. You aren't like your real person in real life. So anyway, I was thinking about all of this. These are the weird thoughts that I have. And I came home and I was like, this has always frustrated me. Greg and I play this game when we're driving where a song will come on the radio and you have to know who the artist is. And I'm getting like moderately better. Like I can guess like 20% of the time now, but usually when I guess, it's so comical who I think is singing the song and who is really singing the song. And yet I'll say to Greg, fine, I'll sing every word of the song though, and you don't know any of the words. And so I'll sing all the words to the song. This summer, we had to wait 90 minutes to have dinner when we were in Florida at the beach going to dinner. We were standing outside in the rain under a tent with Greg's entire family. And so songs kept coming on the radio. And I'm like trying to come up with anything we could talk about while you're waiting in the rain for 90 minutes to eat dinner. And so I would just start guessing who it was that was singing the songs. And his family could not believe how bad I am at this. Like, I am so bad at this. So anyways, I'm driving in my car and I don't know who is singing this song that I'm singing. And I thought about it. I thought as a kid, I knew as a kid that I didn't know who sang songs. And there were people like Greg who always knew who the artist was that was singing songs. I was born in 1972. So this would have been in the early 80s. And the only way that you had any hope of knowing who the artists were that sang the songs was to on Sunday, listen to Casey Kasem and write down in your notebook the top 40, the artist and the name of the song. And that is how you could know who sang songs. So I got out of the car, walked into the house. I said, Greg, do you remember being a kid and listening to the top 40 so you knew who the artist was that was playing the song? He said, yes. I said, and then if you got suckered in by Columbia Records and you sent in your penny for your 10 cassettes to be sent to your house, and then you were stuck in this like $15.99 a month cassette per month, you could get their catalog and you could see who the artists were on the songs. And he said, yes. And I said, our kids will never know our pain. Because when you want to know what a song is today, your radio in your car tells you, or usually they announce it on the radio, or you can hold up your phone with the Shazam app open and your phone will listen to the music and tell you anything you want to know. Or if you even know just a couple of the lyrics, you can Google it and you can find out the name of the song and you can find out the artist. I promise I'm going somewhere with this. Another thing I did when I was a child, I'm a very unusual child, is we got my dad's 1964 set of encyclopedias when I was like 8 or 9 years old. And I was so excited because I made a plan to read every single one of the encyclopedias so I could have all of the knowledge that was in the encyclopedias. I didn't even get to page 3 and I lost interest. But then in like 1984 or 1985, my mom bought this really big encyclopedia. It was like 6 or 7 inches tall. I still have it. And you could open it up and you could read anything you wanted. It was like a condensed encyclopedia. And I thought, okay, maybe I will be able to consume this whole book and then I will have all of the knowledge. Like I had this desire as a kid to know things and to be able to know as much information as possible. And I realized even in high school, like, Lisa, you're never going to be able to know everything there is to know in the United States. Like there's just too much knowledge. You can't possibly learn it all. Although I did have a desire to know all of the knowledge. After I graduated from college with a degree in teaching, I taught for 4 years and then I became a stay-at-home housewife without children because I couldn't get pregnant. And I don't know, somebody said that maybe if you weren't working, I would get pregnant, like if I stopped being a teacher. Plus also I'd replaced my teaching income with my Creative Memories direct sales business. And so I stopped teaching before I even had kids. And when I was home, I did the direct sales business. I also cleaned people's houses and I went to work for this company called Thinkronize at the time. And Thinkronize was going to catalog the internet for the safety of children. And at this time, this would have been like 1998 to 2000. There was this thought process as the internet was developing that every single website that a child would go to on the internet when they were in school would have been checked by a teacher. And so independent teachers, I had my teacher license, could work for this company and we literally would catalog the internet. Like, can you even imagine today what we were trying to do? And even as we were doing it, I was thinking, this can't possibly work. Like, we can't possibly know every single page that a student's going to go to in school on the internet. But at the time, the internet was not very vast yet. And there were ways to, you would just basically go through this synchronized channel, which was like Google in schools. And the only websites that ended up on this channel had been checked by a teacher and made sure that they were okay and they were what they said they were. So I say all of this to you because I've always had this desire in my life to know things, to have knowledge, to be able to learn, to be able to understand the amount of information in my environment, and then be able to make choices based on that information. In 2006, Joey started attending Springer School and Center here in Cincinnati, which is a language learning disability school. And one of the first things that they gave him when he attended there was a laptop computer that had speech-to-text software on it. And the speech-to-text software was developed by Ray Kurzweil. So I heard this name of this futurist, Ray Kurzweil. And he was able to, like literally at school, they could scan any worksheet and it would turn it into speech-to-text. I mean, Joey can read, but also the speech-to-text part of the software just reduced the working memory load from having to read speech, read words, translate those words into words, think about what those words actually meant, and then learn the knowledge from those words. Speech to text just moved the information accumulation process for Joey into listening for understanding versus reading, decoding, understanding the words, and then trying to understand the meaning. It just sped it up. And so they used speech to text a lot at Springer School and Center at that time. I'm sure they probably still do. So this idea that someone, Ray Kurzweil, could invent this way for speech, any kind of speech in any medium to become, or text, to become speech through a software fascinated me because it was such a bigger concept than I could think of in my own. And along the way, I ran into Peter Diamantis, who is also a futurist, and he has partnered with Ray Kurzweil in what they call Abundance 360. And I think I heard about this on a couple of podcasts. And then I joined Strategic Coach. So in Strategic Coach, Dan Sullivan has been a coach for entrepreneurs for over 30 years. And because he has been a coach for entrepreneurs for over 30 years, and he is such an out-of-the-box thinker himself, he kind of knows these people like Ray Kurzweil and Peter Diamantis and all these other people. And so I would occasionally hear Dan Sullivan mention Peter Diamantis, who I knew was working with Ray Kurzweil. And I heard this concept called the singularity. And stick with me, people. I swear, I wasn't going to record this podcast. And then I signed up for a webinar, as I do, because I just like to learn all of the things. And I turned on the webinar two nights ago, and literally the man said, okay, so Ray Kurzweil has singularity, and we're about to get to the point of singularity. And I was like, I knew it. I knew it. Like, I, in my own mind, am like, I think what I heard about in 2006 is happening now, and this is why we are having so much problem figuring out how fast the pace of change is happening in our world. So I'll back up to 2018. In 2018, I joined Strategic Coach, and I flew to Chicago every quarter, and I met for 2 days with a coach inside of Strategic Coach that walked me through the basics of Dan Sullivan's program. And on day one of that program, like in hour number one or two, the coach said that you will never be able to have all of the knowledge that you need in order to make your decisions in your business because it's just not physically possible. The rate at which knowledge is doubling in the world is exponential, and we can't even comprehend the amount of change that is happening at any one time. This is in 2016. And he said at the time in 2018, the amount of knowledge that we have in the medical field is doubling every 16 months. So that would mean 16 months later, you have twice as much medical knowledge, and then twice as much medical knowledge, and twice as much medical knowledge. And just to make sure today that my statistic was accurate, I looked it up on the computer today. The rate at which medical knowledge is doubling. And I found the article by Peter Denson, MD, called Changes and Opportunities Facing Medical Education. And he said, in 1950, it took 50 years for medical knowledge to double. In 1980, it took 7 years for medical knowledge to double. In 2010, it was taking 3.5 years for medical knowledge to double. And brace yourself, in 2020, the entire amount of medical knowledge that we have as a society was doubling every 73 days. Every 73 days. I'm sharing all of this with you because this is something that I have been thinking about. The pace at which we are seeing change in our governments, in our schools, in our buildings, in society, and in everything is incomprehensible. Like, we cannot take in the amount, the quantity, and how much change is happening literally everywhere, all at the same time. And I remember hearing in 2018 that the pace of medical knowledge was doubling every 16 months. And I thought to myself, well, then all kinds of cancers and everything are going to be solved, because if you can literally double the entirety of medical knowledge that fast, like, yes, you are going to have amazing advancements very quickly because of the compounding rate of doubling, which is what Ray Kurzweil was talking about in The Singularity. Now, I don't know much about Ray Kurzweil and The Singularity. Frankly, it freaks me out. Like, I don't want to know about all this doubling and artificial intelligence. I can't wrap my mind around it. So I just know that it's a thing, but I don't know any more about it than that. I had a really hard time with how fast the COVID vaccine was developed because my mind thinks that vaccines take tens of years, hundreds of years sometimes to develop, and the COVID vaccine was developed so fast. But if our entire medical knowledge that we have today will be doubled by the time that we get to February 1st, then yep, I think you could probably develop a vaccine faster and faster and faster. I'm not a medical scientist. I just know that my medical knowledge and the pace at which I'm ready to accept what can happen in medicine is not the reality of what actually is happening in medicine. And it's what is happening in every single thing. Why I wanted to record this podcast, though, is not because of that. That's all actually fact. It's the compounding of knowledge that you could see, the compounding of money you could see in the stock market, the compounding of time I try to explain to you in planning and productivity, but this is the compounding of world knowledge. Now, what I find interesting is not how fast our knowledge is growing, because I can't even comprehend that. What I find fascinating is how small and how limited my personal exposure to information has become, specifically in the last 3 or 4 months. So at the beginning of the pandemic, I don't know what your hobby was. My hobby was, how much knowledge can I find out about the pandemic? I had never read the New York Times before, and every day since March of 2020, I have read the New York Times front page every single day, sometimes 5 times a day on my phone, whatever I'm being served up as the technological digital version of the New York Times. Also, if you swipe left on your iPhone, then you get the top 4 stories that are served to you from iTunes. And before the pandemic even started, the only way I got my news before that was going to LinkedIn, and I would click on the notifications each morning and I would read the 3 to 5 articles that were served up for me there. I have been doing this for about 18 months. And what I started noticing in late summer of 2021 is that all of the stories became the same. If I swiped left and looked at the iTunes stories, or if I went to LinkedIn, or I went to the New York Times, within 12 hours, all of the stories were the same. But that didn't used to be the case in the beginning of 2021 or any of 2020. Like, each of these news outlets were showing different stories, and some never picked up the stories that others picked up. So I've been thinking to myself, is the algorithm on my phone only showing me the same stories in all of these same entities, or are all of these entities all reporting the same news? I don't really know the answer. So I've been seeking out some other news options. One is, this is a private newsletter I really like. It's for business owners. It's called 21 Hats by Lauren Feldman. He used to be a New York Times reporter. And I also like his podcast. It's really fascinating. It's like listening in on other business owners, what they're doing and how they're making decisions. And frankly, I think they share more than they should. And I'm so glad that they do. So I really like that podcast and I really like that newsletter. A lot of what Lauren links to in the 21 Hats podcast and specifically the newsletter, which is news for business owners, he links out to other sources and he often would link out to the Wall Street Journal. So I decided to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal and see if the news in the Wall Street Journal was different. What was fascinating was when I signed up for the Wall Street Journal, they asked me my preferences, and I don't go to the Wall Street Journal homepage. I get an email to me every day of the 10 top stories I should be looking at based on my preferences. I just say that because, you know, we as a company have decided to remove our groups from Facebook so that our community platform is open to everyone that wants to take part of our courses and they don't have to align with another social media platform. When we were in beta and I was in our own app, I went into our app and I went through my groups. There wasn't a lot in there because we were still creating the content. And I was in and out in a couple of minutes and I went, well, it did exactly what I said. Like, it's only positive information. It's everything related to the courses that you've signed up for. It's a positive interacting environment. There's no clickbait. There's no like, ooh, I wish I could stay in this app for 30 minutes because, ooh, what about this? And I wonder what this person said. Like, it didn't have the adrenaline rush of Facebook. Over time, our app by now, I'm sure there's enough content in there that you could stay in our app longer and longer. But I think it's good. You're going to be really, really hard pressed to spend more than 30 minutes in the Organize 365 app. You're really going to have the content that you need in about 5 to 10, and you'll be back out again, which is great for productivity and motivation and doing your course. But I do see how, yeah, Facebook definitely has a clickbaity type thing going on. You get sucked in and you keep going and you keep going. And that is not replicated in our app, good, bad, or indifferent. And I know that my phone and my computer and my Chrome browser know where I am and what I'm doing and what I click on more and what I look on more. And so they show me more of that. And I'm leading to something here. So here's what I'm leading to. We can no longer know everything there is to know because there's just not enough capacity. And while there is more and more and more information every day, our exposure to different ways of thinking and different, even just news articles, is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And our personal worlds are becoming very much what we want them to be. What we like, how we think, is becoming our world. The pandemic has reduced our mental load capacity overall. At least it has mine. I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist, doctor, or any of those things. I'm just a human with a microphone. But I know that I am sleeping more than I ever have. And my ability to think outside of the box, which is pretty well honed, I would say, is just nowhere near what I feel is necessary for the world that we're living in right now. And the world that we're living in right now, as far as the media is concerned, is so fear-driven. It is paralyzing. Greg and I do watch political shows on Sunday morning. He really likes to be informed and yell at the TV, and I try to see both sides. And this was in the beginning of November, and it was on one of the shows that has both Republicans and Democrats on it. And they brought somebody on from the CDC to talk about boosters, about the vaccine. And the person interviewing, the person from the CDC, was asking questions in a way that led the person answering the question to elicit fear and for people to take action. And the person from the CDC was just giving factual answers to the questions that were asked. And so they asked a question, they got a factual answer. They asked a question, they got a factual answer. And then they asked a question that basically said, without saying it, please scare the heck out of us right now. And the person from the CDC said, we don't have enough information to give you that answer. Here's what we're saying right now. And they asked another question trying to scare us. And I just, you know, I don't watch TV because they add extra music in, they add headlines, they add a lot of things that add in a lot of fear and suspense. I only read my news because at least it takes that out of it. But if you just go to any news source and read all of the headlines, they're designed to make you read the article. And for the most part, the headline that is written leaves an open question in your mind that now you really want answered, or presents a statistic in a way that makes you worried or fearful. And because of this lack of mental load capacity that we have, and this unending barrage of fear-related media headlines, we just feel overwhelmed. And the only way that I think I'm observing people in my family, at least, extended family, can deal with this fast pace of change in society, not able to know all of the information, lack of mental load capacity, and constant bombardment of fear, is to draw a line in the sand and say, this is my thought on this stance. I am not moving, and I will defend to the death my stance on who I voted for president, how I feel about the COVID vaccine, whether I'm going to wear a mask or not, like just anything, like name any of these things. Our family members, and I'm sure yours too, have drawn a line in the sand and they've made a definitive decision, and now they are defending that position. And in all sides of my family, Greg's and mine, both sides, I'm thinking of our entire extended family. We had every possible job you can have except for a lawyer. We have teachers, nurses, military, doctors, stay-at-home moms, corporate working people. Like we have all of the kind of workers that you can think about. And our families have always been a mix of Republican and Democrat. But now a lot of our family members have switched political beliefs and have become very resolute in their political belief, and are excluding family members because of their new decisions that they've made for political beliefs, and also excluding family members for their personal decisions that they've made related to the pandemic. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's a fact. And I think that one of the things that hurt me the most when my parents got divorced when I was 35 is that we used to travel home for the holidays. And we stopped traveling home for the holidays because there wasn't a home for us to stay in. And I did think about this the other day. I was like, you know, Lisa, there are hotels that are open at the holidays. Like, I logically thought about this the other day. I thought, oh, people stay at hotels for Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like, clearly they do. They must. But it's never been my norm. My family members have always stayed in homes. Like, but there's no home for me to stay in if I were to travel up to the Akron, Cleveland area. So I just didn't travel because there was no home and I didn't really have the concept of I could have stayed in a hotel. So for the last, 15 years, I have not traveled home for any of the holidays. And I lost a lot of connection time with my family because my parents didn't get along and there was no place for me to literally stay. And I feel like right now, that experience that I had and those lines that were drawn when my parents got divorced of whose side people were going to support in my mom and dad's divorce and how people weren't going to talk to each other and still to this day don't talk to each other really hindered my ability to experience the holidays or to enjoy my family in the way I had prior to being 35 years old. And now I see this happening in most of my families. In most of my families, extended families, there are lines that are being drawn based on a presidential election, which we voted. We have a president. We're going to vote again. There'll be another president. Like, really, we have no more power other than our vote and then to live our lives. So the fact that we are not in relationship or that our relationships are so strained based on something we've already taken the action we're able to take on and we will have another opportunity to take an action in a few years, like, you have no control over the president once they're president. Like, you're not that powerful. So why are you destroying your family relationships over something we don't have control over? I don't understand that. Then we're also drawing lines based on our pandemic experience. And I understand not wanting to expose yourself to a level of risk that you don't want to have. I completely and totally understand that. But there are also lines being drawn that are not so clear cut, that are really just semantics. And I just personally am so saddened. I'm so sad of how much grief and division and hurt and loneliness is happening inside of families, inside of communities, inside of the world, because we don't all think the same way. And I just really feel like there are things worth fighting for, but not everything is worth fighting for. You know what I mean? Like, you have some control, but if you want to control other people and other people's choices, then what's going to happen is you're going to end up out of relationship with those people. And it's sad. It's really sad to have lost a family or a friend relationship over something we really don't have control over anyway. And so, again, I told you, it's a really weird podcast. But my question is, like, if we were sitting on a couch together, my question to you would be, have you thought about this? Have you thought about the exponential, crazy pace of knowledge that we have in the world that we cannot even comprehend? The algorithms and the media and how they are making us think about the thoughts we already have and how little information we actually are being given about a broad spectrum of people. And just talk to people. Like, I have yet to be in a relationship, a complete stranger, it doesn't matter, of a person where when I am one-on-one talking with a person, we don't have a fascinating conversation, get to know each other, hear each other's perspectives. Like, I love people. I love talking to people. I love the nuances and differences in the way that we experience life. And I love learning about that. I don't need people to be like me, and I don't want to be like other people, but I love to hear how different people get information, make their decisions, why they choose what they choose. Maybe that'll change how I think. And I just hope that you have conversations. That being said, there are a couple of people I cannot have conversations with because it's just not a healthy conversation. So I'm not saying that there aren't certain people in your life where that conversation would not be fruitful and is not a meaningful conversation and is not healthy for you to be in that relationship. That I completely understand. But I fear that we feel like we're getting enough knowledge from the internet to make decisions without being in relationship with humans that is ruining true human relationships that maybe don't need to be ruined. And so that's the heavy conversation I leave you with here at the end of 2021. Yeah, I don't really have much more to say about that other than to just bring it to light. Where are you getting your information from? What food are you putting in your brain? Oh, that's what I'll leave you with. So I realized all of this and I decided I was going to record this podcast for you. And then I threw away all the notes and I wasn't. And then I decided I was. But I changed my life. And here's how I changed my life. I realized about a week ago that the news was not going to change. The media is not going to change. If anything, it's going to become more algorithm-based, more fear-based, because that's how they sell papers. And I realized that I'm never going to be able to know everything, but I can learn a lot. And so I have changed my habits. I still look at LinkedIn news in the morning and I still read the 21 Hats podcast, but I'm really trying not to read the New York Times. Or if anything, I just check it morning and night and that's it. I'm not allowed to check it any other time. Since we've moved our groups off of Facebook, I'm just not on Facebook at all unless I'm going on for our live blitzes that are free also on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. I go on Instagram, but only twice a day now, and I used to go on there all the time. And what I found was I must have been spending a lot of time doing this because there's so much time during the day where I'm like, I want to go to my phone and I want to read what's on these social media and media platforms or check my email. And I'm not letting myself, so I'm having to fill my time with other things. So I'm filling my time with audiobooks, occasionally podcasts, webinars that I sign up for, pay for or free, and watch later, TV shows, and reading books. And so I have to consciously have an audiobook that I can't wait to listen to again. Podcasts that are really addictive like this are anything Wondery makes. I really like the Wondery brand of podcasts. I've gotten a few good books that I like. I have one in my bedroom and one down in the family room in case I'm feeding Grayson because my brain needs a lot of entertainment. I like to be thinking and entertained all the time. And so I need to have an audiobook, a podcast, a TV show I'm really ready to watch, and a book I'm ready to read all the time so that when I go to my phone and I'm like, maybe I'll check the news or maybe I'll go on social media, instead, I open the podcast app, I open the Audible app, or I go grab a book, and I'm getting a lot more book reading done, and I'm growing my knowledge. I no longer think that I can have all the knowledge, but I have more knowledge than I had before. I hope you guys have a great Christmas Eve if you're listening to this real time. If you're listening to this real time, you may be on your own on Christmas Eve. I know it can be a very lonely and sad time when you don't have family and friends to spend the holiday with, especially if you had before. So I would love to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year if you celebrate. Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy all the other things that you guys celebrate at this time of year. I really appreciate you listening to the podcast, and I love sharing my organizational and other weird thoughts with you. I hope this podcast was meaningful to you.